Welcome to Kinfolk War. We're hyped to talk about the final two episodes of season three of The Witcher on Netflix. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra, uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country, and navigated the conflicts of House of the Dragon. You can find our season one and two coverage of The Witcher in your podcast feeds, and this is the last two episodes because I'm declaring bankruptcy after Henry Cavill, so it is.
He's joking, I think.
I think.
We don't know. So we're here today to discuss two jam-packed episodes of chaos, bloodshed, justice, and revenge. Spoiler alert, we'll be talking about the events of episodes 7 and 8, all the episodes leading up to it. That includes seasons 1 and 2, some comparison to the book. So if you haven't had a chance to watch the entire season, like, what are you even doing here? It's been like over a week. Like, go watch it.
Crazy.
And then come back and listen to this episode after.
And Kinfolk Lore without adult content, it's like an episode with a unicorn showing up in a season without Yend around. It should not happen. But at least in our case, we kept our end of the bargain. Unlike Lauren, I don't know what's going on. We will have adult content as fast and as furious as ascending to the throne can get in the way of following around your favorite bard as if you were a Swifty with an all-show pass. Oh, let's go. So the episode 7 is called Out of the Fire, Into the Frying Pan, or like I've dubbed it in my mind, Cerealone. Oh, man. It's like they watch Atla and they were like, let's do it, but not the same. So let's talk about Ciri. The portal at Tor Lora sent Ciri to the middle of Korath Desert, injured and alone. The injury, a little bit unclear. It's could be a dislocation, maybe not, but somehow she's able to snap it back in and eventually get back the function of her arm as if I don't know, maybe bones heal. I hope it's just dislocation. That's what I went with. So Ciri clings to her memories of being happy with Yen and Geralt. After a day of walking, she realizes that she has been walking in circles. Just as she's about to lose hope and is attacked by a monster, she finds a friend, a unicorn. Ciri names him Little Horse. He leads her to a place where she can feel chaos in the earth, and she finds water. Ciri sees a series of visions of women from her past, Pavetta, Calanthe, and Falca, who is a previous family member, but she's meeting for the first time. So possibly a family member, we're not sure. This is kind of what we're still waiting to find out. And each of them have a different message. When Little Horse is fatally wounded, here goes Ciri again, trying to get in the way of fate. She taps into fire magic to heal him at Falca's urging. Once she embodies her power, Ciri sees the future that shows her that her powers mean death and destruction for everyone. In that moment, she relinquishes her magic and wakes up to see several men standing over her. She's been captured. Everyone else. Let's talk about everyone else in this episode.
Let's move from the Ciri alone portion into what happened to literally the rest of the characters.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many people in this particular one, but let's see. In the aftermath of the battle, Yaskier searches for Geralt and Ciri at Aretuza, but comes up on Radovid instead. Radovid fills him in on what's happened. Yaskier tells Radovid how to get back to Redania. He gives him the secret Sandpiper map. There's, you know, he wants to make sure he gets home safe. He's like, you know, plans change, as he says. Yen and Yaskier reunite. Which
bard?
These two have the best relationship.
I love it. I loved it when they did it in season two. I loved it even more here. It's great.
It's so great. Yen tells him that she cannot find Ciri in the rubble, but that Geralt was taken by Triss to Brokilon. In Brokilon, Geralt is clinging to life. He is really, really badly wounded, as we already knew, but you're really seeing the full ramifications of it here. And Triss has left the Dryads with a medallion and a reminder that something is out there that waits for him. All right? That's what she wanted to leave there. I don't know why that medallion was the one.
We're going to talk about this. I have so many problems with this.
Why? Why that medallion, though? Like, it's so weird.
I don't understand this, but whatever. Go on.
Yes, this is strange. So Yaskier arrives at Brokilon. He almost gets murked out. They're not playing around with him. They're not letting humans in. And then eventually he's let in, and he tells Geralt that Yen is okay, but it appears Ciri has been captured by Nilfgaard. And it's a beautiful scene when Yaskier gets let in, singing an elven song that, in my opinion, it brought the Dryads to tears, and it was just beautiful.
I have a question about the song. I'm not sure, but we'll talk about that. We should come back to the song.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do that. Of course. It's the time we got Yaskier singing, and I mean, like, anything worth consequence in this episode, geez, in this season.
Yeah, that's true. He hasn't really had that much singing opportunity aside from when he was entertaining Radovid and his little friends.
And Valdo Marx is like running up the charts, just beating him up. It's terrible.
Episode 8 was called The Cost of Chaos. Geralt's still in really bad shape, but once he hears that Ciri is definitely in Nilfgaard's custody, he agrees to allow the Dryads to tend to his wounds with the healing waters. Milva, who we met in episode 7, and Yaskier help him with his rehabilitation.
You'd be dead right now.
I love Milva. She's so good. She's so good. Yen takes Triss, Margarita, Sabrina, Kira, to Taseya to the castle where Geralt found the missing novices. Philippa is already there, and she tells them it's too late. Castle is empty. Francesca and Frangilla arrive in Nilfgaard to strike a deal with Emir. They want Sintra, and he wants a Skoytel. Francesca's basically given up on everything. She doesn't care about Ciri anymore. And she's lost her brother, she's lost her child, she's lost her husband. And Frangilla tells her about Amir's role in killing her baby.
When keeping it real goes wrong. Wow.
Way wrong.
Way wrong.
Francesca, rather than being enraged, is stunningly hurt because, as she said last season, Frangilla was her partner. Mm-hmm. This is something that Frangilla kept from her, and she can't forgive her for it. So she turns on everybody. She's like, fuck Amir, fuck Frangilla, everybody can burn.
Yo, it's going to be a bad look for people. I'm nervous for them.
Yeah. I don't know if you want this Franny to be that enraged.
Well, but I mean, the good news is she's just going to murk everybody, and that will give him an out when they cancel the show. So it's fine.
Things in Redania, not going so great.
No.
Not going so great. Vizimir tells Dijkstra that someone has to pay for their failure at Thanet and for the fact that Radovid, despite having secret codes and a map, never got home. Never came back.
This guy
wandering in the fucking wilderness.
Oh my gosh.
And Vizimir has decided that someone is Philippa.
Bad decision. Really bad decision. Especially when you don't actually know how to use a sword and you need to tie it up on a string and hang it from the ceiling to look like you're triumphant in battle in your painting, in your portrait. Really bad decision.
At Aretusa, while the others hold a service for the novices, Taseya writes Yen a letter. And then she takes her own life. I haven't cried this much in a show when I knew this character death was coming in a long time. This really...
It sucked.
These two on screen together are extremely good and moving. And I just hate to say goodbye to Taseya.
Yeah, me too. It sucked. Like I couldn't believe it. You know, I was texting you like, no, wait, no, no. Like I could not believe that that's what was happening. So
yeah. It's really awful. In her grief, Yen goes to Brokolan to see Geralt. He pledges that he's going to find Ciri and tells her to go back to the mages because they can't restore order and peace without her. Mm. Yen then uses magic to heal him. Big question mark about this. Put a pin in it. Let's return to it later. In Redania, Radovid returns and tells Vizimir that Philippa found him. You would think that that would make things better for Philippa, but it doesn't really change things much because he calls, what does he call her? A shape-shifting little shit.
Yeah. Oh, Vizimir.
Philippa has other ideas, though. She has decided to have Vizimir killed, and she names Radovid the new king of Redania.
Yo,
I have never seen anyone so bewildered to get a crown like ever.
Yo, he was out the door. He was getting a change of clothes and he was running out to the Yaskier concert. And he can't believe that this is what's going on. It's kind of crazy. I don't know what to say. And the way that Philippa does this shit on some like to Dijkstra, I'm so glad I can trust you, but I can't trust you with my strategy.
It was such a good own. Like, he totally deserved that. But yeah. I love that moment between her and Dijkstra. Yeah. I really did. They're a great duo.
Me too.
Nilfgaard welcomes Princess Ciri. Titles. I'm not even going to give you all the titles that they gave her. It was wild. I was like, where did all these titles come from for Cirilla? I thought she was just the lion cub of Syntra.
Yeah, she had new kingdoms and other things that were like vassal states that I was like, what the hell happened here? It was crazy. It was nuts.
Except it's not Cirilla. It's actually Terran, who I have questions about how Terran got in their custody.
When you said what else could go wrong? When he left her and didn't bring her back to Aretuza, the last thing I was thinking about was her actually ascending to the throne. Holy shit. Crazy shit.
I got questions about, I guess my biggest question is like what happened to the couple that was taking care of her? I can't believe that they just turned her over.
No, definitely something crazy happened with that. And I mean, you can tell that something crazy happened because look at your boy's face. Your boy's face got melted up.
Yeah, but that's because Cirilla did that. No, real Ciri, please stand up. She did that. That's what happens when you run up on a girl and a portal is speaking to her.
Yeah, like, that's the real Sim Ciri, please stand up. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's so great.
I'm just saying, he got off easy because remember what she did to those guys who tried to attack her in season one?
Yeah.
100%. He's lucky that he just lost part of his face.
1,000%.
Cirilla, the actual Cirilla, is actually in the same tavern that Falca first appeared to her in when she was hallucinating in the desert. She's rescued by a group called the Rats, and in the process, she kills someone for the first time. With them, with the Rats, she adopts the new name of Falca. Geralt and Yaskier hit the road. They get to a blockade, and Geralt hands over the medallion that Triss left, which is Renfri's medallion.
Yeah, weird.
I have questions.
Why do they keep doing this to us? We are so ready to say goodbye to Renfri. Like I don't. This was like the episode one, season one, where the story was all disjointed. This is how he became the Butcher of Blaviken. We're good on this storyline. We're good on it.
I don't understand what we were supposed to get out of this. Anyway, he gives it up. I guess that means he's leaving his Witcher-ness behind. I think that's what the show is trying to tell us. But another family is turned away and Geralt takes offense. So everybody has to die. Because you know, if Geralt gets upset, everybody got to die. He leaves one dude alive just to send a message to Emir. I'm like, this guy is cut up and Nilfgaard is like 1,000 miles away. You think he's going to get, and then when he gets there, is the king going to see him and be like, yeah, I got real beat up by a witcher.
Oh my
who has
God.
A message for you.
Yeah. When Nova. I saw this scene, by the way, in the trailer, remember we were talking about the trailer, there was no part of me that thought that it would just be a random like rage out by Geralt. I thought it was going to be a rage out. I thought he was going to be fighting, but I thought it was going to be like something totally different than like, I got through a checkpoint and I'm just going to go off because you were mean to another family. What a weird, weird flex by Geralt. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, I think this is the end of neutrality, right? Old Geralt would have kept it moving.
Mm-hmm.
But new Geralt, who's pissed at everyone and now looking for vengeance, was not about that life. So this is what we got. Good news is that Milva shows up and joins them and saves Geralt's life. And Geralt and Yaskier walk off into the distance. And that is the last time we will see Henry Cavill on this show.
And the last time that I will watch. So it's fine. It's all good. I'm going to like, just let it go. I'm declaring fan bankruptcy right now. I've seen these mock-up pictures and Photoshop jobs of people on top of Geralt of Rivia's body and his face. There's only one thing that can be done here. Let's pour one out for the showrunners at Netflix, because this is terrible. This is hard, for sure, hard. To say that this is the last time we're going to see Henry as the Witcher.
It is. I wish we didn't know. You know, I feel like I would have gone into this season feeling differently, and it would have met different. I would have had different expectations that maybe the show could have met if we didn't know going into this season. This was Henry Cavill's last season. I'm not giving up on the show quite yet, because there's a number of extremely interesting women characters in this show, and I'm invested in them.
Me too.
So
I am too.
I think the show can continue without him. I just don't think that Netflix handled his leaving right.
Yeah.
And again, I will never get over the fact that I honestly believe that this was about Superman, and I just can't. I just can't do it. It was like understandable, like clearly being part of the DCEU is a much bigger gig than being Geralt of Rivia on Netflix.
Is it though?
It is. Superman is a big gig.
Superman is a big gig, but I mean, the DCEU is having its own troubles.
Well, its troubles, they were like, we're just going to blow this up and start over.
Yeah.
The reason it made me so salty is because I felt like he left in part because of the Superman stuff. And I think that was partially because of scheduling and other things. But then he's not even going to be Superman, which is the whole thing is just upsetting. So this is a very sour note to begin and end the season with. I think with time, I will feel better. I think that by the time this show comes back in 2026, like that's probably what we're looking at. You know, I think that I could get beyond that. I do think the show is in danger.
Yeah, it's in danger. I love Yen. I love Siri. Here's the thing. When I didn't know, because I hadn't read this far ahead, that Taseya was going to die. When they got to this point and then she dies too, I'm like, well, wait, now you're taking another character that I love off the board. Like, love Taseya. You know what I mean? Like, she's great. You know what I mean? So it's just, we'll see. I think it is in danger. I do think that what I loved about this season is that they, you know, I think Siri and Yen had a lot more, and to be fair, Yaskier as well, They were at the heart of a lot more. They're always a big part of the show, but it wasn't all about Geralt, so to speak. There were whole episodes where you didn't really care what was happening with Geralt, to be completely honest. So it's probably intentional, probably smart. But besides pouring one out for the Netflix exec that could not renew a contract, let's pour one out. Out of the not in the meta, in our world, in for Taseya. Directress of Aretuza, the mother of Yennefer of Engelberg. and countless other young novices. Man, she will be missed.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Pull out a little liquor. Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
We will also make mention of King Vizimir's death. He was the comic relief. It was fun. Maybe gone too soon. I hesitate to pour anything out. A toast, perhaps, where we get to drink ourselves. Okay.
I just want to note that in the book, he is known as Vizimir the Just. So I don't know what that means for how history will record his legacy. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, don't let it be remembered here forever in the annals of history of fantasy. Just don't freaking make an enemy of a shape-shifting mage. It's not a good idea. Like, just don't do it. Like, you're going to kill... Yeah, okay, sure. Sounds good. Anyway. So how do we feel about this episode?
Episode 7 is rough.
Yeah.
It's rough. I wanted to like it. I had warned you about this episode going into the season because I was like, maybe they won't do it.
No, your exact quote was, I mean, I think they won't do all the weird series stuff. And I was like, what weird series stuff? You were like, yeah, let's just hope they don't do all the weird series stuff. But they did.
Yeah, and they made it weirder. And I have mixed feelings about bringing Falca into the fold like this.
Yeah.
So I find that part frustrating. I actually just wish that they had made one of the spinoffs about Falca.
Yeah.
Rather than the spinoffs that, you know, Blood Origin, which they have, you know, already has premiered, but also now the Rats are getting their own spinoff show. I'm less interested in how the Rats spent their time before they met Ciri than I am about Falca.
Yeah, me too. That's kind of crazy that they've decided to do the Rats. Like, why do
I don't quite get it, but I'm open minded to it because one thing we haven't seen in this show much is what it's like to move through this world if you're not a magical person,
yeah,
or if you're not a person with some kind of powers. And so I think it's interesting from that point of view, because in the video game, you kind of get to experience that even when you're just like walking through a city.
Yeah.
People in this world are really miserable. As Yen noted in season 2, like everybody on the continent is unhappy because their lives are super hard. So I think I'm open-minded to it just because it could be an interesting tale, but I don't quite understand what the show's been doing with Falca. I've even had people say to me about our podcast that you guys talk about Falca a lot. And I'm like, this is why.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is why. We didn't know that this was going to happen, but like, we knew that in the background of this story, Falca's story came up in every season.
And she looms large in the story as a whole. And yeah. I mean, that was
the last major conflict that these people went through. Even though it was 100 years ago, people still talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it reshaped the entire continent. So it's like, I'm not sure how I feel about that episode. Episode 8, even though that's the episode where Tisea dies, I liked it a lot. I thought it had a lot of episode 8 is actually taken from Baptism by Fire. Mm-hmm. Baptism of Fire, sorry. And I really enjoyed that stuff with Milva. Mm-hmm. She's a great addition. I enjoyed all of the scenes with Yen. I have questions about that scene between Yen and Geralt. I don't think it really fit. I know why they did it, but yeah, I just didn't feel great. Again, Joey Beatty continues to be one of the most important actors on this show. Like any scene with Yaskier is really good. I even like the stuff with Dara. I just felt that, I don't know. I think part of it is that they split this season up in a weird way. I would not have split it episode 5.
Where would you have done it? Where do you think you would have done it
I would have done an even split.
Yeah.
Five doesn't work without six. And honestly, after the like come down of six, going straight into Siri being in the desert, tough, really tough episode. And then to kind of do almost a wrap up episode, like think of all the major plot points that happened in episode eight. It was just like, let's check in with every single storyline.
Yeah, they had to because they have to. Exactly.
Right. So I don't know. I have questions about that. I think they were in a hard situation with that final episode. I don't think there's any way you can really meet everyone's expectations, but the last two episodes are very poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. Like they're, people did not like these episodes and I don't blame them. I liked episode eight, but I can understand why people were very disappointed by it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I liked episode eight. I just feel like I want to, you know, talk a little bit about Siri's visions and the Siri Alone episode, because there's some good stuff in there, but there's some questionable things of why they're doing it too, right? Like, so let's start with Pavetta. Like, I think Pavetta, I mean, Pavetta, obviously this is all in Siri's mind, but in her mind, she's come to the conclusion, or we believe it's in her mind. Maybe it's a real vision that's magically happening. We don't know. We don't have clarity. But what Pavetta ends up saying is basically telling her, you're too much. You're basically a burden to everyone who loves you. I mean, what I like about what they did there is that then this is the first time where Siri has to confront her feelings of guilt. And I thought that was interesting, but I don't love the way it's done because it just feels like I'm kind of joking about the Siri Alone, Zuko Alone thing, but it literally reminds me of that. And a lot of times when you get a character on their own, like in Zuko Alone and for the Avatar watchers, there's some depth that's added to the character. I don't feel like I learned anything new about Siri truly in this episode other than her perspective on standing up to people who are in her past as her in her family line and potentially one that's in her family line because we don't even know if Falca is. What were your thoughts on that, on the like feedback from the different women that she encountered from her family?
I think they all represent like a different emotion that Siri is experiencing. So Pavetta represents her insecurities and fear, especially around the danger that she is to everyone who loves her. I mean, this is a young woman, and I actually don't think that we as an audience have spent enough time pondering what Cirilla has been through. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the show hasn't given us the space to do that. I think this is a show that is sometimes almost too action packed. But like at this point, Siri has lost two sets of parents.
Yeah.
Honestly, three sets of parents. She loses Dooney and Pavetta, Calanth and Iced, Geralt and Yen. Mousak, Triss, she probably feels like Triss abandoned her.
Dara,
every single person who has cared for her, has showed her kindness and love, is gone. Mm-hmm. Or she thinks is gone. As far as, in her point of view, as far as she knows, at least Geralt is dead.
That's right.
And maybe Vesemir. Yen too?
And Vesemir too. Vesemir, I forgot about that. Vesemir tried to turn her into a witcher. And then the whole thing.
And then tried to turn on her. Although I don't know if she remembers when he tried to kill her.
Yeah.
She was possessed. Yeah. Yeah. She's what, Siri's probably 16 at this point. Like this is a lot for a girl her age to have experienced. And so I think Calanthe's appearance is part of that trauma. And then Pavetta is, you know, coming to her Calanthe represents her doubt in herself, because essentially what Calanthe has been saying is, you want to help, right? Mm-hmm. But the continent is more messed up than ever. And what have you done? Like, at least I may have been flawed, but at least I was a woman of action. Like, you've spent the last year running and hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And then Falca shows up and she represents all of Ciri's rage and anger that she's even been put in this position, that people have been hunting her, that she can't just be who she is. I totally liked where they were going with this. Yeah. I just question bringing Falca in to represent this part of it. I almost would have preferred if they had Yen appear to her and deliver some of this.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, they're trying to introduce Falca as a major player, and you know, I mean, it's clear, right? The writers are like, you know, when you hear lines like "I'm the past and this is the future, history repeats itself," they're doing this whole thing about history repeating itself, and you know, it just reminds me, you know, I keep quoting these other shows, but it just reminds me he could be another Magor. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that's this is the same shit, right? Like, it's like, I get it. Like, yes, we get it that she has similarities possibly to what people fear about Falca, and they're hinting at it, right? Even with the Wild Hunt, where they're saying, you know, you are death itself. And you know, so I get where they're going, but I agree. I think it was a little heavy-handed to introduce her in this way, but you know, and we'll talk a little bit more when we talk about Blood Origin, some theories that I have about why they're doing this. And we'll, you know, but I won't, you know, we'll wait so that, you know, if you haven't watched Blood Origin, it's a little bit of a spoiler. So,
But what I did like about the Falca scenes was the inverse, well, not necessarily the inverse, but what was the repetition of what Geralt said to her in episode 4, mm-hmm. manifesting in what Falca said to her here. Which means that Ciri buried what Geralt said to her deep into her consciousness and then brought it back up, but she leaned into it. And when we covered episode 4, I had quoted directly from the episode because I thought the way that Geralt phrased it was great. Righteousness can easily become rage. Justice can become scorn. Here we have Falca saying, your revenge is justice. Mm-hmm. Your wrath is righteousness. They deserve to suffer. Make them. Those you love will betray you too, trick you. You'll always be their pawn. Feel your rage, child of elder blood. Feel the feel the pleasure of release. That's not what Geralt was trying to say, right?
No.
He was actually furthering his neutrality and saying that when you lean into a side, when you pick a side, very easily justice and righteousness can be distorted and become these other things. And he was cautioning her against that. And here we have Falca telling her, actually do that. Like, let what has trying to be neutral gotten you? And this was the theme of this episode. By the end of this episode, everyone is like, they have to die. Like, that's
and
basically...
And the question that we're all left with is any of this actually happening? Like, did she really relinquish her powers? Is the little horse real? Did she mm-hmm. summon Falca? Like, I don't know. I have no clue. I just know that, like, maybe she was delirious in a desert and was dehydrated. That could be that's a real thing.
I think I meant when I was telling you about this chapter in the book, I was like, it's like Ciri drank cactus juice. Like, I don't know. I'm very sorry to our listeners who have not watched Avatar: The Last Airbender, but I was just like, I don't know if any of this is real. Like, the book doesn't help much with that. I think we have to assume that in the book, Ciri spent some time in the desert. All of these appearances by these women from her family bloodline, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But she does hear voices. In fact, one of the voices she hears is Tisea's, which is what made me think, oh, this can't be real.
I also think, I think that's what's making me think it can't be real either. But the other thing I thought about a lot, and you and I talked about this offline, is I it's very, I don't know if the original writer was thinking this, you know, or if the showrunners wanted to, you know, kind of do this too, but it really does put me in the mind of like some, the religious iconography that we, you know, like Jesus 40 days in the desert, you know, there's like in Buddhism, there's a story about, you know, the Siddhartha Gautama becoming the Buddha but he was really like by not eating food and then eventually sitting under the tree and then reaching enlightenment. There's like these stories of like pivotal figures in the world of like spiritual thought and religious practice, where there's like this kind of like purification that happens by going through the desert and or going through a desolation of like what is in what we, you know, have in our everyday life. And so I think it's very interesting that they've put Siri through this now. It's almost like a trial. She hasn't done the trial of grasses, thank goodness, because we've seen what that looks like. But it's really interesting to see that they've put her through this kind of trial where it's still ambiguous of whether she's the savior of the world or whether she is the destruction of the world. One of the other things I thought I wanted to call out was Siri calling out Roach, told Little Horse you should meet Roach. I mean,
that was so cute.
Yeah, I mean, but so then Geralt has renamed this horse Roach.
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem of it. I actually wasn't sure how to take that. So my first watch, I was like, oh no, she's talking about the original Roach. But then when I watched again, the way she says it, actually she says you would have liked her. Or you'd really like her. So I'm not sure what to think of it. If Geralt has renamed this horse Roach, I'm very disappointed in Geralt.
I mean,
it's the same devastation that I felt when I played the video game and he was like, yeah, I just call all my horses Roach.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is
very upsetting.
Yeah. But you know what, though? Growth happened in this episode, too, because the same lion cub of Syntra, the same Princess Cirilla, who, I don't eat rat. Boy, she was eating anything she could get her hands on in this episode. She was.
Can I just say her and Dara both went through a lot? This is progress. This is progress. Dara had emotional growth, but Siri was like, I got bugs, lizards, whatever. I'll eat it.
I'll eat it all. Oh, man. So we have an introduction of Crack on Crate. In this episode, who's played by an actor who's in a lot of shows. I kind of dig this guy.
I do too. Yeah. I like his general vibe. Like, yeah. He wasn't a big character on Game of Thrones, but I still recognized him as soon as he came on screen. I was like so excited to see him.
Huge character in Valhalla, Vikings Valhalla. Like, love his character in that, and also like had a cameo in Succession. It was weird to see him not in a period piece because he's normally in these kind of period pieces. But what did we think? Like he lays out finally what Siri is worth and why she's dangerous as like a political weapon. Like, what do you think of all that?
This line that he gives us in this like what 2 minute scene mm-hmm. with Yen. Why are we getting this now? This should have happened much earlier because for a long time, people have been confused about why everyone wants their hands on Siri, especially like why Vizimir apparently wanted to maybe marry her. Mm-hmm. Because if Syntra has fallen, sure, he can try to reclaim Syntra if he has Siri, but he has to defeat Nilfgaard to do it. That's not a small thing. What we learn here is actually because of her connection to Skellige, she actually has a bunch of vassal states in addition to being the Princess of Syntra.
Which is why she had all those titles when they announced your girl, Taryn.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this, I was like, how did this man sum up the entirety of Ciri's worth in a single sentence? He's basically like, if she pledges with Nilfgaard, we have to fight with Nilfgaard too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The entire continent shifts why didn't we learn this? We could have learned this through dialogue with Philippa and Dijkstra back in season two. I don't understand why this is being laid out so plainly now when Ciri is missing.
And it's clear that because that they didn't say it means that Philippa is exactly right. We cannot trust Dijkstra with our strategy. Like, how do we not know this? Like, this should have definitely been at the top of his mind. Like, this is like such a huge gem to think about it from just a strategic war standpoint. Forget about the magic. Forget about it. It's just like, oh, like she has... Like her pledge means that a whole bunch of other people jump in this too on their side, and that shifts like everything. So yeah, I'm with you on that. That should have been clearer, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. This character, Kraken and Krait, is a huge character in the video game, super important, and is really loyal to Ciri, and that is, I think that's why Yen went to see him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he is someone who, because he's pledged to her, will stay true to Ciri. And I think that's really important. And I'm like, this is why I don't want to quite give up on the show. I want to see what happens with this. I've been waiting for us to see these islands for like literally 4 years. To have them introduced in the final episode was kind of devastating to me. And to have it be reduced down to just a scene with him and Yen, I really didn't like.
It's all right. I'll drown my troubles in a Dornish red. I'll be fine. When it comes House of the Dragon time, I'll be like, oh yeah, give me that. That's fine. Oh man. So lot of terribleness after Thenet. Lots. That leads to us losing one of our most beloved characters. And it really starts with Taseya and Philippa like really just having it out verbally about what they've both missed, how they've both failed. Philippa starts in on her first, but Taseya, you know, also has something to say about where Philippa failed. So for Taseya's part, Philippa failed to identify early, while he was operating right under the nose, their nose in Redania, Vilgefortz. And Taseya, she failed to protect the novices and the Brotherhood, for that matter. And it was very interesting what we learn about some of the ways that some of the concessions Taseya has had to make, what she says to Yen, to even be included in the Brotherhood. And what that did to her in having to navigate the political landscape of the mages and the kingdoms, but also just internally what she's had to endure, knowing that she was highly skilled and, you know, more skilled than most of I would say a lot of the people in the Brotherhood. So anyway. I thought it was a lot of interesting dialogue here that gives us context as to where both people came out, and eventually we end up losing Taseya.
Yeah, I think that I don't really love Taseya doing, like, I don't ever like the notion of framing suicide as a sacrifice.
Yeah.
However, I did think the show did a good job of showing how emotionally devastated Taseya was. Mm-hmm. I think that this was less of a, like, I'm leaving because, you know, you guys need new leaders and I obviously don't trust myself to lead you, and more of a, I can't go further. Mm-hmm. Because I think part of it is that she lays on her own hands the death of every mage that died at Thanet, the death of all of those novices, and the forthcoming death of many people. I think that she can't get beyond the emotional wreckage that's left. And I also think that a lot of her chaos is just drained. And one of the things that we've learned from the show, going all the way back to I think episode two, is that chaos has a cost. Mm-hmm. It's not an infinite, you know, source of magic, and that it drains you. And I think Taseya just didn't have much left to give.
Yeah,
I do think the scene between her and Yen is one of the most beautiful scenes between two adult women in a mother-daughter role that I've seen recently on television. It was really, it was just really moving. Like, your pain is my pain.
Yeah.
Wow. Your pain is my pain. That it was just really, it was, it kind of for me was just a beautiful demonstration of what the mother-daughter relationship looks like with two adults, which is just something that we don't always get to see outside of, like, you know, the nagging mom, the mom with high expectations you can never meet. Like, this was two people who are extremely old. I mean, Yen is over 100. Saint Seiya is one of the oldest mages on the continent. I think it was really beautiful to see them try to be there for each other, and for Yen to be to say, "I'm not going to let you go down this path. I'm not going to let you to forget who you are." But even with all of that, she couldn't stop this. I think that the timing was just the timing. I think this would have been inevitable, and so I really liked the scene, but it was really rough. And I've watched this scene now 3 times, and every time it's gotten rougher. It's really tough.
Yeah, no, it's a tough, tough scene. And I agree. I agree with everything you just said. It was so moving, and it was, you know, when she turns around and says, you know, "I could never do that. Your pain is my pain." Like, that was really, really, like, emotional. But the other thing that I thought also was, her saying something that most kids actually wait to hear from their parents. They, you know, that feeling of being acknowledged and belief, and, like, we all kids kind of want to have that kind of, like, co-sign from their parents. And for her to say, "I know you'll do great things, my daughter." Like, I know, like, that's like, that was like, also, I think that was like moving because of this showed how far their relationship had come from the very beginning, you know, really, really, really tough stuff, to say goodbye to Seiya. And obviously Geralt's recovery, we talked about a little bit. One of the things we didn't talk about was, Milva. And I think Milva...
Before we get to Milva, I want to talk about Yen. Because there was something I wanted to say in episode 6 that I didn't say.
Girl, yeah, of course.
Because I think when we recorded episode 6, you hadn't seen episode 8 yet. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I can't count on our listeners having... But I find Yen's appearance in Brokolon to be totally bizarre.
Oh, yeah, we were going to get there. Oh, yeah, for sure. 110% we were going to get there. This is weird. This is very strange.
So we talked about at the top of this episode, which, Bard, very funny moment. But then when Yen is debriefing with him, with Yaskier, she tells him that Geralt is in Brokolon and may be dying. And she does nothing. She doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So then for me, mind you, also Triss does nothing, right? She doesn't portal into Brokolon, see how he's doing. No one does anything. Yaskier arrives there on foot. So then for her to then show up in Brokolon in this episode and heal him, I don't understand this. Like, this makes no sense to me. If she had the ability to heal him, and if I'm assuming if Yen has it, probably Triss could do it too. Triss has healed him from a mortal wound before.
Listen, she has, but neither one of them have anything on one Claire Frazier. Okay? Claire Frazier, close your ears if you've not watched Outlander, has the distinction amongst all people of jerking a man back to life. Okay? Like, he was dead and just jerked him back to life. It really happened. That's all I'm going to say. Watch for yourself. She is Yen has nothing on that. So
well, you know, Claire is a noted healer. So I found this to be, while I think the scene itself is beautiful.
Yeah.
I loved it. It had to happen because Yen and Geralt in this form need to see each other one last time. Like I'm still kind of heartbroken that the last time Ciri and Geralt saw each other was in episode 6.
Yeah.
And that like we'll never have Freya and Henry on screen together.
Yeah, I mean it was super meta again. For them to be like, tell me this isn't the last time I'll see you. It actually is. And then they don't really reply to that. Super meta. Like it's super like wink wink nod nod to the audience in a way of like, I don't know if they intended it that way, but I definitely was like, oh, wow, crazy.
I think it was intended that way.
Yeah.
But Yen's whole behavior is baffling here. And this was the feedback that I saw when these episodes became available on Netflix in the 48 hours afterwards. This was the feedback I saw on the internet. I'm sorry, Yen casually mentions to Yaskier that Geralt might be dying. And then he goes there on foot.
Yeah, I felt that the first time that I saw that. I was.
It's like yeah. Really... And so my assumption was that Yen was going to look for Ciri, and that's why she couldn't get to Geralt. And it was kind of like, I can't return to Geralt until I know where Ciri is. And I think that is part of her in-universe, the character's thought. I still just thought, this scene is actually kind of bizarre. Now, granted, I wouldn't want their last scene to be the exchange where she says, well, then don't abandon me.
Yeah.
But I,
and then
this type of stuff
her?
Is,
sorry.
This type of stuff is what people complain about on this show. This makes no sense in the for the characters to behave this way.
Yeah. That'd be, it would be crazy for this to be like the way that it is. It is the way that it is, but they should have thought it through differently. But yeah, especially if, she said, don't abandon me. And then in actuality, not the character, but Henry actually is never on the screen with her again. It would be super wild. So anyway, I mean, we're getting a little meta with that, but I hear you. I felt the same way. And I felt it when she first said it, like, oh, he's in Brokolan, he may be dying, but I got other shit to do here at Hour Twos. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like that, it's super wild. And then she didn't even get a portal for our guy, Yaskier. He was just like, yeah, all right, see you then.
Yeah, and in the book, Yaskier travels for weeks to get to Brokolan. Like, it's clear that this has been a long journey. I don't think we're supposed to take that from the show. I think it's supposed to be, like, maybe a week.
Yeah.
But the whole thing was baffling. I'm sorry, but I just had to talk about that.
No, I love it. I it was on my mind, and I thought we were going to get there anyway, so we just got there. Yeah, that was great. I love it. I think that... you know, there's a lot of surprises that we're seeing in this episode, and you know, and some new characters. One surprise is the fact that Renfri's medallion is what's used to remind Geralt, and that Melva gives it back to him again after, you know, while he's in Brokolan. They keep giving it back to him to remind him. I just wonder why, and I also wonder...
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this is in part my own laziness, because I have a sense that this is connected to the episode with the Striga in season one. Like, that when Triss was healing him, she found this medallion, and they had that conversation about something being out there for him. Mm. And that's why Triss is returning it, because she thinks that it will trigger that memory in him another time that he was mortally wounded, feeling kind of down and about and feeling kind of like untethered to anything. Mm-hmm. That this medallion he'd been carrying around for quite a while, right? Because Foltis was a grown man when the Striga episode happened. So probably like 30 years he'd been carrying this medallion around. I just don't understand how the general, if I can't find the connection, I don't understand how the general audience is supposed to care. Like, why would they care about Renfrey? Also, why would anyone remember who Renfrey is? We haven't seen her. She dies in the first episode.
Yeah. I mean, the in universe, for what they explain, when you're on the internet and you're talking and looking at stuff, it's about like her being the mirror image of Geralt, which is why he had to kill her. And it's like they're trying to tell a story of three different periods of his life, of like the Renfrey period, the Yen period, and then the Ciri period, when they're all three together. I don't get it. I just don't think that that's not the story that I've observed as they've been telling it. So it just feels a little forced. Like I didn't see I'm with you. She died in the first episode. I don't have any emotional weight to the medallion. And when they do the flashback and show that it's on her, I'm like, I have more questions than I have answers, you know?
I guess as a show watcher, right? I mean, I've read the books, but like I've read not all of them, and I've only read them in the context of the show. So for me, the three periods of Geralt's life are not the Renfrey period, the Yaskier period. He meets Yaskier in the next episode.
Yeah, agreed.
Then the Yen period, then the Ciri period. But like the Yen and the Ciri period overlap. Like we know that because he's literally looking for Yennefer, which is how he finds Ciri.
And we forgot about the whole Triss period. Where
No. Like, that's not a period. That was a blip.
That was a blip. We forgot, you know, Triss was trying to push up, you know, this whole unrequited love period that Triss has. Oh my gosh. Before our boy.
Before she had a fling with Istrid. I mean,
floating through a portal somewhere. And I don't know what the fuck happened. Where he's at. He's just floating.
I hope he pops up in season 4 and he's like, man, I've been traveling for years.
Yeah, that portal. Great. Oh my goodness. And then, you know, it's very interesting to hear Geralt's response to Milva when she's telling him he shouldn't leave, he's not well, that just because you're hiding from the world doesn't mean I have to. Showing that Geralt is, you know, he's ready to, he's not going to give up. Like, we never would expect it, but it's really verbally like solidifying that he's not giving up, you know, like he's going to go forward.
And that he sees for once a reason to participate in the world, which was a thing that when that period where what we'll call the Yaskier period was when he didn't really want to talk to people or be around people or make relationships with anyone, where he had his like extremely close inner circle, which I'm assuming, you know, included Vesemir, Eskel, some of the other witchers. And then Yaskier kind of just like attached himself to Geralt and became his friend. But that period of his life, he was hiding from the world in plain sight because he had to make that coin, right? But like after that incident with Renfrey, I think he withdrew. And so for me, this is...
But he became a friend to humanity though. As...
Well, yeah.
Toss a coin to your witcher.
Well, only in the song. I mean, we don't know. That was a PR piece. Yeah. You know, what he's really like, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no, it's like when you said him and Yaskier became friends, I just was humming in my head, toss a coin. It just like stuck. It's so great. It's such a great scene in the beginning of the show.
And so I guess I like this. I like everything with Milva. You know, Milva's a great character.
Yeah.
She is, I actually think that they made her more engaging and funny and interesting in the show than she appears to be in the book. She's a little bit more serious in the book.
Yeah.
But we get a couple of chapters in Baptism of Fire that are like from her point of view, not a couple of chapters, we get a chapter that is from her point of view. And I really appreciate that because you're allowed to like be in Milva's headspace. I love the way that they kind of unpacked their new philosophies in life together. But I just, again, this conversation she has with him, it kind of lands in Geralt being like, everybody has to die now. Like, everyone who's ever hurt me, everyone who's ever looked wrong at Ciri, anyone who's called Yen anything I don't like, they all gotta go. I mean, he doesn't say that, but he's basically like, I'm gonna make them pay.
Oh, he's making everybody pay. And even Dara gives him a little bit. Dara comes out and was like, sends a message of forgiveness to Siri, and he's like, he's unbothered. He's unbothered with it. I mean, good luck, finally, Dara, that you finally fucking like did this. Like, cause like, what were you so mad about? Like, why are you this mad? But it was very.
She did almost get him killed.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. Like, that happens all the time in the continent.
That's true, but she did almost get him killed. Like, let's not. Dara had every reason to be mad. I didn't think he had a reason to be murderous.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It was a little,
that's what I was like.
Extra. Yeah. But I'm so glad that Dara has emotionally evolved and is seeing things a little bit differently now. And I also think that, like, Dara is, in a lot of times, our stand-in for the elves. And the fact that he's gotten to this point of, like, there are certain things I just won't do. I don't want to become them. Like, that shows us a different perspective from Francesca, who I'm pretty sure is just going to raise the continent to the ground. Like, she's just going to burn everything.
Yeah, I have nothing for that. I think she is. I think, or maybe she'll, like, you know, do it surgically, the people who wronged her, but it's going to be a lot of people. A lot of people wronged her. So,
I mean. Well, I have, so since we're talking about Francesca, I did want your perspective on, what is this show going to do with her character? Because this is not who Francesca is in the book. Do you see Francesca as primarily an antagonist? Like, how do you see her?
No, I do not see her primarily as an antagonist. I see her as a person who has a clear mission of trying to restore her people to a place where they could be safe. And she sees the stuff that she's been doing as a means to an end. And as she's been going, she's continuing to take losses that would indicate to her, at least in the show, that maybe the course that she's on is wrong. I actually think there's a way for her to link up now with with Yen and all the other mages in this newly formed kind of like you know, group that they have. I don't want to call it what they call it in the books, because they haven't officially, I don't think they've officially said it that way in the show.
Yeah, I've seen it referred to by its name on social media, but I can't remember if that was from the official Netflix or if that was from like one of the many like fan sites. But this group that Jens brought together of Margarita, Kira, Sabrina, Triss. Who else? Was Marty there?
I think so. I think Marty was there.
I don't remember if Marty was there or not. I am wondering if, since Desea is gone and Francesca watched her murder her husband, that maybe Francesca will come back into the fold with the other mages now that the Brotherhood is vanquished and Tisea is dead. I think that's really the only path forward I see for Francesca in any meaningful way, because otherwise we just have a really crowded field of villains. And I'm confused about what this show does with her and what this show does with Radovid. Because both of them are way off timelines. I don't know what to make of them, but I do think Francesca, I'm a little worried that it goes another way. Now that she doesn't think Siri is going to be the savior of her people, I think what Frangilla was suggesting was hurting Amir through Siri, take what he loves. And I wonder if Francesca will go down that path.
I don't like it either.
I don't like it because Siri is an innocent. I think Francesca can see that she's not logical. Like, she knows, like, she's not completely like deranged. I think the show's made her a little more deranged than I would like to think she is. But I don't know. I'm a little confused about her. I'm obviously confused about Kahir. We didn't see him at all.
Yeah, we're all confused about Kahir. We don't know.
He wasn't in these episodes. I'm assuming he's still alive because they didn't tell us that he is dead, but
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that that's the stuff that will keep us coming back. Like, that, with all jokes aside, like, that's the stuff that'll have us watch. But they're gonna have a very short kind of like window to solidify that this show can go on in the state that it's gonna be in. And the reason why we're all gonna come back is because there are all these loose ends and these interesting plot points. If you're paying attention and you are a fan of the world, if you're a casual watcher, they may lose those casual watchers, which is why, you know, it may, we'll see how it does as far as like staying on the air. But yeah, so I think it's going to be interesting. What's going to happen with Kahir? What Francesca's aim is going to be, whether she's going to go the way that we, either of the ways that we just talked about. And you know, what's going to happen with Imposter Siri? These and other quandaries.
I got really, I'm concerned about Taryn.
Yeah.
I actually think that the casual watchers, if this show is able to survive, they're the ones who are going to save it. Because I think that it's actually the big fans who've been the problem for Netflix. It's the casual watchers who are kind of like, I enjoyed that. It was fine. You know, like, they're not really looking for the kind of fidelity to the source material that I think got the show in trouble initially. And now it's the fidelity to the source material is not, it can't save a larger problem. But from my understanding, it's like a lot of the casual watchers enjoyed the show. They thought it was fun and like interesting, and they're emotionally engaged in it. I think the problem is when the plot lines are too convoluted or confusing for them. So I guess we'll see. I mean, obviously, The Witcher is not the only show that's in danger right now.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, we're in the midst of a very long writer strike, a very, well, not long actor strike, but a contentious actor strike. And the streaming services are at the center of that. And so I think we're going to be waiting a long time for a lot of our favorite stories to conclude. Whether this show can overcome both the absence of Henry Cavill, who was just like an incredible Geralt of Rivia, and another prolonged delay. I don't know, to be honest. These delays, they've been tough.
Yeah.
They've been really, really tough. Like,
I agree.
I remember when the House of the Dragon wrapped and people learned there wouldn't be another season for 2 years. There was a collective groan. This is not a beloved show in the same way. I don't know that it could survive even another delay. So we'll just have to see if it can overcome all these things. I think we'll find out pretty soon whether or not it can.
Yeah, I mean, really soon with a spinoff about the rats. I mean, it's gonna happen. They're gonna, when is that? Do you know when that's coming?
Well, it was in development at the end of 2022. I don't know how far they got. You know, I don't think any shooting's been done, but I do know that Netflix has been promoting a picture of the rats with Siri in it, and circulating that on social media. I think that they're still going ahead with the project, but I don't know where the project is exactly. So my guess is if we see it anytime soon, we will likely see it maybe middle of next year.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. All right, like if they have it all, if they had it all written, or the strike is over, perhaps.
Yeah. I don't know where it was at. I know that Lauren Hisrich is also the executive producer of that show, so they're all kind of tied together. She's like the common denominator amongst all these shows, but I'm not sure where it is. It's been mostly a rumor. I don't think we have a lot of like concrete information about this, but it does seem like Netflix is leaning into it since they put out that promo picture of the rats. Who were only in one episode. So, you know, it wasn't like them putting out like a promo picture of this, the Skowtel, right? It was like, yeah. It was one episode.
It's kind of crazy. You know, I will say this though, as we bring things to a close, I really enjoyed this season. I know there's all the stuff about the meta conversations and the other things, but all in all, you know, this was a big jump forward for this show, which is why it stings so bad about some of the things that we're talking about in the meta conversation, because I really felt like they finally got their legs under them in this season in a way that they hadn't in season one with all the timeline stuff. And then in season two, it felt like they were not all over the place with timeline stuff, but it definitely felt like there were some things that they were introducing, the monoliths, the other things that we were kind of just questioning why this was coming the way that it is. And they still have some issues they're cleaning up there, you know, as we discussed already in this episode. But I do think, like, all in all, they gave most characters something important to do. There was conflict. There were things that they wanted that were standing in their way. And it just felt very well thought out. It was really my favorite season of this show.
I liked it a lot, too. Not every episode worked. I would say in this season, there were 8 episodes. 3 of them didn't really work for me. Mm-hmm. But episode 6 is probably my favorite episode of this show.
Yep.
And the thing that's interesting is that I always love when they do really big battles in this show. And that's not, for me, that's not true in other shows. The battle episodes of Game of Thrones, I liked a lot of them, but I didn't like all of them. And while I think Battle of the Bastards is like just like an epically well done battle period, like it's just from like a perspective of how did they even film this, is great. But the reason it works is because the emotional stakes are really high. And one thing that The Witcher has accomplished with both the Battle of Thanet and the Battle at Sodden is that we met some of these mages for the first time minutes before. And we still cared so much about how they fared in the battle, what happened to them, what, like, the emotional stakes of the fighting have been really impressive to me, because you don't quite know which side you're on in Thanet, right? You know, except for the moment when Stregobor comes on, which was extremely confusing. But I think episode 6 was just one of their best from a storytelling point of view, and also from just like a big set piece point of view, like that Ring of Fire falling down.
Yeah,
that was amazing. Yeah, like, it was just really well done.
Yeah.
That said, I could have done about episode 7 in this season.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I was supposed to get from Ciri alone. but I loved it. I liked this season a lot. I still continue to like the show. Even leading up to this season, we were both like, we're feeling a little bit ambivalent. We're really frustrated by the Henry Cavill situation. But we both really walked away having them surprise us. And that happened with season 2 as well. And now season 2 seems like, why did we even do that when we could have had this instead?
Mm-hmm. Well, it has been a pleasure. We will be back next week with some coverage of Blood Origin, as promised. But this is the last 2 episodes of The Witcher season 3. So, yeah, it's been a fun ride. Always a pleasure doing these things with you, cuz.
Same.
Yeah, and so we'll see you next week, and we'll talk Blood Origin, and we will stay on the continent. Until then, see you next time.
Bye, everyone.